This is the Sophia Mare Studios podcast. Hi, I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess, and we're the Rambling Raven Puffs.
Because Potterheads are far too nuanced to be shoved into just one Hogwarts house.
Each week, we will cover two chapters in the saga of our favorite boy wizard.
All the while exploring literary themes, tarot card exercises, and even fanfic speculations.
To connect with us, your fabulous host, and other listeners, join the Discord server for Sophomere Studios.
And to support the podcast and gain access to exclusive bonus features, consider joining our Patreon page at patreon.com/sophiamarestudios, all lowercase.
Thank you for tuning in, grab your butterbeer, and enjoy the show.
Welcome again to the Rambling Raven Puffs. Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess.
And today we are covering Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, chapters 9 and 10. The Half-Blood Prince, titular chapter, and the House of Gaunt. In these chapters, Harry gets a helping hand from a mysterious former student.
Yeah. Ooh, who is this? I don't know.
Someone important.
I don't know. Yeah.
Someone important if the book is named after them.
Right. Yeah.
And chapter 10, we get a little sneak peek into Voldemort's family history.
Pretty, not great, I would say.
So I know you were very intrigued last time we were on about, you know, because we've heard about the House of Black and, you know,
right,
just the House of Gaunt. We've never heard that before. So of all the things, what were you expecting? And, you know, the fact that it was that.
I really had no idea. And then that this was the turn it took. I did not expect that at all. Like, I don't know what I expected, but I mean, it's stressing me out that Dumbledore's hanging around so much. I know he's done. we're hanging out with him too much. He's gonna peace out. But yeah, this is definitely not the path that I thought it would take. It makes sense, but anyway.
Yeah.
No.
I will say that, you know, just like in Order of the Phoenix, when I said you know, the order, the big fight between like Sirius and Molly Weasley, like that chapter, like on the audiobook, was something like I would just have on repeat because I was too lazy to change the CD. So I fell asleep to that a lot. So this sort of section of the Half-Blood Prince, chapters 9 and 10, is also one of those areas that was just background music and what I would fall asleep to.
Thank God, because I was like bleary. I mean, I've had a couple of days, so it's just, yeah, anyway. I can talk about it, but
yes,
you probably could recite it.
Yeah, cannot. Like there are honestly probably are some passages I could, you know, repeat verbatim.
That's
excuse me. Again, I apologize in advance to our listeners if I have a few more coughs than usual. I am still recovering from COVID.
So sorry. It's still a thing. My God. Yeah.
So the House of Gaunt, you know, is a chapter again. This sort of deep dives into history. This is a big component of why in my childhood that Half-Blood Prince was my favorite.
Oh, okay.
You know, going in this sort of angle of trying to really dissect Voldemort's past.
That, I mean, yeah, a character exploration is very interesting. And I did like how there was kind of like the potions and then the love potion and all that stuff. So.
Mm-hmm. Which I don't think it's a coincidence on Harry the writer's part, the fact that he's introducing that one of the potions was the Amortentia potion, and which is considered like the most powerful love potion, and the fact that we get this backstory of Voldemort's parents and probably the ways in which that was utilized.
Well, as you know, I'm a romance reader. I am introducing myself to the world of fan fiction. Thank you very much. So there was a little kind of like little bit of, that was probably my favorite part of this chapter, was the little romantic realization that Harry had.
Oh, yeah, that. Of yes. course. So since Amortentia came up so early, it's not directly stated. You know, it's, you know, Dumbledore says multiple times throughout the series that, you know, Voldemort cannot understand love. The sort of, it's kind of, it's been confirmed by Harry Potter's shitty ghostwriter.
Okay.
That a big portion of why Voldemort cannot understand love, it's not just that he's ambitious and greedy and, you know, evil and stuff. Like, it is a, like, a neurological component that because he was conceived under a love potion, that he cannot understand real love.
Wow, that really sucks.
Yeah, so that's an interesting, you know, sort of thing in Harry Potter lore, that the idea that, not that there weren't other factors, but that probably, you know, was one of the more, like, you know, biological factors in the nature versus nurture of how one becomes evil.
Got it. Huh.
Anyway, but we'll get to that. First, Chapter 9, The Half-Blood Prince. And so we begin with Harry losing no time in telling Hermione what he had overheard Malfoy saying on the train. And Ron just wants to poo-poo it immediately. And Hermione's like, well, like, yeah, Malfoy likes to show off, but that's a pretty big thing to, like, shoot your mouth off about.
Yeah, yeah.
So is Hermione coming to Harry's line of thinking? We shall see.
Yeah. Yeah, they're not really, I don't know. They're not really taking, they're not so quickly taking his side right now.
Yeah. And then also they start to worrying about, oh crap, Hagrid and Care of Magical Creatures.
Yeah, they're feeling a little guilty. And then they're also kind of like, nobody really would be wanting to do that. And I was like, that's kind of sucks, because I would. But I guess I'm not an Hogwarts. Yeah,
but
so.
I can't really think we'd continue Care of Magical Creatures. I mean, when has any of us expressed, you know, any enthusiasm? That's it, though, isn't it? Said Ron, swallowing an entire fried egg whole. We were the ones who made the most effort in classes because we like Hagrid.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah.
Just they were just trying to be nice, even though they weren't super interested. I guess it would be like for me if, like, I had a math teacher I really liked and I was just trying to be like, which most of my math teachers were just mean.
And then, you know, they have to get their schedules, but it's taking a little longer because McGonagall has to go in and confirm that they have the necessary OWL grade to take those classes that they've requested. And we get this little cute interaction between Neville and McGonagall where she's going over, you know, his classes with him, and it's like, oh, Professor Sprout will be delighted to have you back, with an O in Herbology. And she's like, sorry, but, you know, you really don't have the grade to continue forth with Transfiguration. Neville looked miserable and muttered something about, oh, it's like, why do you want to continue with Transfiguration anyway? I never had the impression that you particularly enjoyed it. And Neville is like, you know, caving into his grandmother's pressure. And McGonagall is just like, it's high time your grandmother learned to be proud of the grandson she's got rather than the one she thinks she ought to have, particularly after what happened in the ministry. And it's like, preach, McGonagall.
Yeah, good job, McGonagall. And she's exactly right. Old vulture hat needs to freaking just...
old vulture hat.
Appreciate Neville for the kid he is.
Yeah, and on top of that, McGonagall's like, you could take an NUWT in Charms. You got an exceed expectations. Why not take Charms? And Neville's like, my grandmother thinks Charms is a soft option. Take Charms, said Professor McGonagall, and I shall drop Augusta a line reminding her that just because she failed her Charms OWL, the subject is not necessarily worthless.
Bring in the sass. I guess that's what happens when you have teachers that have been there forever.
Probably McGonagall and Augusta are the same age and probably were classmates.
Wow. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm. And then we get a throwaway of with Parvati that, you know, that Ferenczi has not left, nor has he been dismissed from. So now all the divination classes are divided between Ferenczi and Professor Trelawney.
Yeah. I mean, Australia, Pavarti, but get stuck with Trelawney instead of the hot centaur, I guess.
Yeah. Which I'm not going to go into, you know, Kevin's obsession with horse pants.
Horse pants.
Like,
I, yeah.
Again, if you want that whole tirade, listeners, I forward you to the Fox and the Foxhound Harry Potter podcast.
Enjoy. I don't give a lot of thought to horse pants. So, Kevin, thanks for doing the work for us.
Yep. And so we get to Harry, and McGonagall's like, well, don't you want to be an Auror? Like, why aren't you in potions? And he's like, I didn't think I could. And it's like, you couldn't when Professor Snape was teaching. Again, total arbitrary standards. That's not fair. That students' careers are literally hanging in the balance because of one dipshit's, you know, sense of perfectionism.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Pretty, but I mean, I guess, hey, we have a new potions teacher. Harry is welcome to that because we all know where silly Snape is.
Honestly, even if Harry had maybe not gotten the appropriate grade, you know Slughorn would have let him in.
Oh, yeah. Because he could teach Harry Potter. I mean, that's all he's about is the collecting of people. I just read a book about collecting people too, anyway. Like in a horror way, anyway. Oh God.
In a social predatory way.
Yes. Yes. I just had a bunch of flashbacks that I didn't want. Okay. Thank you.
I know. Whenever you go horror, I immediately think of that random book which I haven't even read, you know, the Southern Belles book club.
Oh, yeah.
Guy just slaying vampires or some shit.
And I fell into his trap again because I just ordered another Grady Hendrix book. So it was just the bugs. It's just too much for me.
No. So. Okay. So, and then a few minutes later, Ron was cleared to do the same subjects as Harry, and the two of them left the table together. And I just, one of my notes at this passage was like, Ron, get some of your own hobbies and your own interest. Like,
yeah, I thought that's weird that they copied the same schedule.
Copied the same schedule, and that was the same thing that happened in the third year when they started to take on like these new electives. Like Ron chose divination and care of magical creatures basically to be with Harry. Like, you know, again, he needs to find his own little niche. Like there's absolutely nothing in this world that can't be his niche, or his brother's already done it, and it's like, no.
Yeah, get some, like, I mean, I had a good friend in high school, but I was in drama and she was not. Like, you gotta have something different. I don't know.
Yeah, well, again, what was our fanfic speculation? That Ron actually be a seer and actually be very psychic and intuitive?
That'd be awesome.
That could be his thing.
He needs a thing.
Yeah,
not
he
just
needs a thing.
Walking in Harry and his brother's shadows.
Yeah. And then we get a little tidbit about, you know, Harry has to prep for, you know, all the tryouts for Quidditch.
Oh yeah, there's a little
and
pressure
because
there.
the only player on the Quidditch team that was in the original, you know, group of seven when Harry joined is Katie Bell.
Oh, okay.
And
oh.
She's like, you mustn't start off like that, you know, good teams have been ruined now because captains just kept playing the old faces or letting in their friends. And again, just off mic, we were discussing a lot of nepotism in the corporate and other, you know, the working world. And it's like,
in the world.
Obviously, yeah. I have experience in the Middle East where it's, again, very, you know, still very tribal in a lot of ways. And therefore, like, you know, nepotism is rampant. And I used to think that in the U.S., it's not that it doesn't exist, but it can only get you in the door. Like, you still have to do the job still. And if you can't end up doing the job, then it's going to come back and bite you in the butt.
Yeah.
And my naive way, I thought that nepotism could only get you so far. But then I realized, nope, there are people who are still in the positions that they're in that they have no business in and no one called them to count.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's very annoying.
Anyway. So, an hour later, they reluctantly left the sunlit common room for the defense against the Dark Arts classroom. So, D-A-D-A, Snape style. Your thoughts?
My thoughts is like, okay, the Haunted Mansion. He talks about, and has this been mentioned before? Because that was immediately what I thought about. Because they described these pictures on the wall of people in pain. And if you ever have done the Haunted Mansion ride, you know, you go in the thing and there's the wall. And then as it sinks down, you see all kinds of craziness. I doubt I'm the first person to make that comparison, but that's immediately what I thought about.
Snape is surprised until he directly gets into you know, picking on Harry and the groups, he's surprisingly like measured.
Yeah.
It's in the sense of, you know, when he would tell them about potions, our kind of understanding is, even from the very first potions lessons, is that he was saying, like, you know, yes, potions are very complex. You won't be able to understand them, you know.
Right.
You know, because unlike the usual dunderheads I'm forced to teach. Like, here he's less saying they're complicated and therefore you guys are idiots and therefore you can't understand it. I guess we can attribute this that this is more of his interest, and therefore he's kind, at least in the beginning, he's kind of keeping it to like about the subject matter,
yeah,
and not about terrorizing teenagers.
Yeah, like it's like he's so, at least in Snape's mind, he feels like he, at least this is how I interpreted it in his kind of change in demeanor, was like, oh, finally I'm at the place I'm supposed to be, I'm gonna act right, at least for a little while,
for a teeny tiny bit. So we've got Snape going, the dark arts are many, varied, ever-changing, and eternal. Fighting them is like fighting a many-headed monster, which each time a neck is severed, sprouts a head even fiercer and cleverer than before. You are fighting that which is unfixed, mutating, indestructible.
It's like he's in love with this.
And that's Harry's just like, the fuck?
Yeah, like, dude, chill. You're in a classroom. That's what I would say.
Yeah. Honestly, like, that description honestly kind of makes me think of COVID, like, just as virial disease constantly mutating, and you know every time we get a grip on one variant, another variant is taking its place.
That's true.
And also that sort of unfixed nature and constantly having to keep up, that's like, that kind of reminds me of when certain, like, cyber laws are not keeping up with advanced technology in regards to, like, cyber stalking and all sorts of things, and identity theft and all sorts of crap.
Oh, yeah. Try looking for a job in this day. I feel like I've almost gotten scammed numerous times. It's awful.
I almost got scammed as well, because it was being some sort of content writer or, like, editor, I don't know, something that appeared to be like a, like, writer's organization, but then I looked it up a little bit and, like, yeah, and I told them, yeah, you're scams, leave me alone.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. But anything. And Snape's like, your defenses must therefore be as flexible and inventive as the arts you seek to undo. These pictures, again, haunted mansion portraits, yeah, as you went into, give a fair representation of what can happen to those who suffer, for instance, the Cruciatus curse, feel the Dementor's kiss, or provoke the aggression of the Infurious.
What does he? Why does he have these on his wall? Like, the Haunted Mansion is its own thing. It's very whimsical, whatever. But, like, I don't know. Like, it's weird. Because these are moving, too, right?
Yeah.
Like, okay. It's like the typical Harry Potter thing. I just don't understand why. I was like, well, I guess, is he just trying to constantly, like, remind the kids of the intensity of, like, what's happening? I don't know.
In his own, I think it's both for him. It's both to, like, remind them the intensity of it. And also he just gets a sick kick of terrorizing, of creeping them out.
He needs to chill.
Which is limited with cauldrons and potions.
Get a girlfriend or a boyfriend, Snape. Whatever you're into, I don't care. Do something. Anyway.
Yeah, and because even, again, this seems, at the beginning, Snape is being very, again, mild and focused on the subject. And even when, like, he doesn't even say, you didn't raise your hand, Miss Parvati. Like, Parvati says, have an Infurious been seen then? And all he says is, the Dark Lord has used Infurious in the past, which means you would be well advised to assume he might use them again. So it's like, so he had one interaction with a student that was completely not snarky. And it was just like, yeah, you might.
Yeah. Well, and also I thought his wording was interesting. He says the Dark Lord, which, I mean, like, Snape is set up to be kind of like, have some duality here. But it's calling him the Dark Lord almost shows a bit of reverence toward Voldemort. And I just thought that word choice was interesting. So.
Well, Harry in the last book called Snape out on it, you know.
Yeah.
Why are you calling him the Dark Lord? Only his followers do that. And if you prescribe to the theory that Snape is a double agent but ultimately works for Dumbledore, you might excuse this in one's headcanon that, again, he's had to play this part for so long that that's now just ingrained in his speech.
Snape, you're a puzzle. You're an asshole and you're a puzzle.
Snape sides, you know, you're going to start learning nonverbal spells, which obviously gives you a competitive advantage and has the element of surprise. So he pairs them all off, and it's not as bad as it could be because Harry actually taught all the kids.
Right.
You know, the shield charm, just not nonverbally.
Right.
And so then we get one of the best sassy Harry moments.
Yeah, God.
This is the one where Snape tries to, you know, jinx Harry, and Harry just out of instinct says the shield charm verbally and throws Snape off balance. And Snape is like, "Do you remember me telling you we are practicing nonverbal spells, Potter?" "Yes," said Harry stiffly. "Yes, sir. There's no need to call me sir, professor."
God, what a sassy kid. And then, of course, he gets detention because, like, come on, Harry.
Mm-hmm. And again, Harry is like, what's Dumbledore playing at letting him teach defense? Did you hear him talking about the dark arts he loves of all that unfixed, indestructible stuff? And yes. Hermione's like, well, I thought he sounded a bit like you.
Ooh, Hermione. What?
Mic drop. Yes, yeah. When you were telling us what it's like to face Voldemort, you said it wasn't just memorizing a bunch of spells. You said it was just you and your brains and your guts. Well, wasn't that what Snape was saying? That it really comes down to being brave and quick thinking? Harry was so disarmed that she had thought his words as well worth memorizing as the standard book of spells that he did not argue. Which, again, for all those, you know, there is a fair amount of Snape-Hermione fanfiction out there.
Some of these I just can't get on board with. I don't know, but, you know, what up?
Again, that's one passage people can turn to in the idea that, you know, Hermione can see past all of Snape's bullshit. Not that it excuses Snape's bullshit, but she can read the subtext.
I mean, I get it. I'm not gonna read it, but I get it. That's what I'm saying.
And then I guess one thing I had in my notes is, you know, we have, you know, Snape describing the dark arts and just the whole notion of the dark arts with the capital A, like this emergence in literature, you know, of, you know, like in Star Wars, the dark side. And yes. even in the first book, Harry the writer refers to, I'm never going to the dark side.
Yeah.
So just, yeah, it's interesting, this notion of, like, what is the dark side? Again, I'm getting really, like, metaphysical and philosophical here, you know, excuse me. It's just, you know, beyond all the, like, macabre, gothic, you know, trappings of what often is involved in some book or some franchise's notion of the dark side, like, you know, what is the dark side and what causes someone, you know, to, you know, be tempted down that road. Again, I'm thinking of the dark side because I'm doing a lot of Star Wars fan fiction right now and a lot of Obi-Wan alone contemplating Anakin's turn, so I'm thinking about those are at the forefront. That's right now.
Makes sense. Like the dark, what are they like? I think I read a lot about, like, shadow work and things like that. I know that, I don't know if that's the road we're going down. The dark side and...
Yeah, well, obviously, it comes, you know, at the part core of it comes from the traditional Judeo-Christian view of Satan and, you know, of religious notion of evil.
Yeah.
And, you know, what does evil comprise? Like, you know, like, what is evil? Like, because when I think of what is evil, like... Even with I'm not thinking about it religiously or not, I just immediately go to the seven deadly sins.
Yeah.
Which, what are they? They're wrath, anger, lust, jealousy, greed, sloth.
I'm trying to think of seven. The movie. Power? Oh, that's not one, is it?
Vanity. You know, arrogance.
Vanity.
Pride. Okay. And pride is considered the worst one because how dare you think you're better than God. But there's one more. Okay. Anger, greed, lust, jealousy, pride, sloth, gluttony.
Gluttony. Yes. Okay. Yeah. Very dark scene in that movie. That's what I was thinking of. Now, I know that that's not what it's based on, but the movie is based on the seven deadly sins. Mm-hmm. It's been a long time since I've seen it. But yeah, okay. I don't know.
So yeah, just interesting notions of the dark side. And also I thought about specifically in the Harry Potter world is, you know, we have the dark arts, which are clearly a subset of tangible magical spells, objects, things that, you know, are considered, you know, bad and evil and do horrible things. But we have, so we have the dark arts, and then we have the pure blood mania and the pure blood prejudice. And so often those are melded together, but technically they really have nothing to do with each other. So I'm just one. So I've always wondered, like, was there ever like a muggle born like wizard or witch that ended up going bad and using all these dark arts, but they're just, their evil crusade had absolutely no basis in like blood purity or anything, and they just wanted power.
That's a good question. There's I don't know. It would make sense that there would be, because, you know, it's kind of, are all Slytherins like pure blood?
Well, that's a question, because one question I grapple with is, are all Slytherins pure blood because that's what Slytherin, the guy, the founder of that house, honestly believed in, and therefore the Sorting Hat sorts all only the students that founder would approve of? Or is the Sorting Hat sometimes being merciful that even if there's a Muggle-born who exhibits mostly in personality Slytherin qualities, but chooses not to because of all the crap that they would deal with if they got stuck in Slytherin with a bunch of crazy-ass purebloods? Because honestly, my personal headcanon is that there's a good chunk of Ravenclaws that are personality-wise much more Slytherin, but the Sorting Hat didn't, but their blood status is such that the Sorting Hat didn't want to torture them by putting them in Slytherin house.
That would make sense. Okay.
Yeah, one of the Try Guys was like, not all Slytherins are Nazis, but all Nazis are Slytherins.
There you go. Yeah, that's funny.
Anyway, so after Snape's class, we get a little handwritten note from Double D.
Class, all the way. Love it, Dumbledore.
Yeah, so he has a lesson with Harry on Saturday at 8 p.m., which means Harry gets to skip out on Snape's detention.
Harry, I knew that, like, sure, maybe this time, but Dumbledore isn't going to, like, disrespect Snape like that for some flipping reason.
Yeah, and Dumbledore's like, P.S., I enjoy acid pops.
Yeah. And I mean, and yet Ron is, of course, reading this over his shoulder, and he's like, what? You know, like, this guy's pretty eccentric. And then Harry's like, it's the freaking password, like, chill.
Yep. And so then we go on to potions class. So what was your impression of the potions class and how Slughorn style of teaching?
Love Slughorn style of teaching. It's a lot more fun than freaking being terrified the entire time of, you know, Snape, who's just going to be like demeaning.
Poison you with your own concoction.
Yeah, he does. Like, I feel like Slughorn and I would be similar teachers. Like, I don't care who's your mother or whatever. That's where Slughorn and I differ. But where he's kind of like has a little incentive for them to do a good job. And then, which I really liked that. And I don't know, it just definitely gave up an entirely different kind of feel to this. It gave me Witch's Apothecary rather than like incel emo, you know, extracting his revenge. Yeah. Listening to Nine Inch Nails. That's always kind of, well, how I imagined him. But
yeah. So we get this sort of presentation of Slughorn's got all of these different potions, and most of them we actually have already seen or heard of before.
Right.
We've got Veritaserum, which Snape has threatened Harry with.
Yeah.
In the past.
Yes.
Numerous times.
Yeah. Right.
We've got Polyjuice Potion, which Pity is
Hermione.
What,
or no, yeah, that's not. Yeah.
Back in is. Book two.
Okay.
And then the new one, as you discussed, is Amortentia.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, but most powerful love potion, and Slughorn describes it as, you know, obviously it's impossible to replicate, manufacture love. All it can do is create an intense infatuation and obsession.
Whew, I mean, as we find out that, you know, I thought it was pretty cute that Hermione, you know, she's trying to, that he kind of asks what it is or whatever, and what smell, kind of the recipe or whatever, and then she like stops and gets really embarrassed because
it's like, yeah, because it each smells differently,
right?
to each person and what personally attracts them. And so she's like, I smell freshly mown grass and new parchment. And which, again, freshly mown grass, like, I love that smell. Like, I can get high on that smell.
Yeah. I mean, that one was pretty, like, okay, people like that. And then she gets embarrassed and I'm like, what does Victor Crumb's
what is Victor Crumb's cologne?
That is who I immediately thought of, but.
Mm-hmm. And Slughorn's like, what's your name? Hermione Granger. And he puts it together that this is the Muggle-born friend that Harry was referring to.
Yeah.
He's like, oh ho, one. I am assuming this is the very friend of whom you spoke, Harry. Yes, sir. Well, well, take 20 earned points for Gryffindor, Miss Granger, said Slughorn genially. And Hermione turns to Harry with a radiant expression, whispered, did you really tell him I'm the best in the year? Oh, Harry. And Ron is not here for that.
No, no.
Ron immediately is like, well, what's so impressive about that? Whispered Ron, for who some reason looked annoyed. You are the best in the year, I'd have told him myself if he asked me.
Ron, get a hobby. This is more and more. Just Ron, just kind of
get a hobby and, you know, make a move if you want to get with Hermione.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Come on, man.
He had, well, again, but this is the kid who had the audacity to be offended that Hermione refused to go with Ron as a last resort and went with Crumb to the Yule Ball.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Oh, we'll see where this goes. I know where it goes.
yep, so, and then finally we get an introduction of the final potion, which is like a pale gold, and like the little drops are like going in and out like little fishes.
Cute. Yeah.
And this is called Felix Felicis, and it is in essence liquid luck, where you just drink it and everything like goes right.
But if you drink it like every day or whatever, it ends up poorly.
If taken in excess, it causes giddiness, recklessness, and dangerous overconfidence.
Do you think, what's his face? Oh, God. I can't think of his name. I can see him in my mind's eye. The second one, the good-looking guy. Lockhart? Yes. I feel like he's got, like, an addiction to this shit.
I would only dispute that because I don't think Lockhart would have the competency to brew this very difficult potion.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
But maybe he's wealthy enough from his books that he can buy it, but...
Things also don't really go his way, but he definitely kind of embodies some of the overconfidence, recklessness, and giddiness, maybe? I don't know.
Well, the only thing I would say is that recklessness implies like putting yourself in harm's way. And as we saw in Gildor Lockhart, he was a coward who was willing to gamble with other people's lives, yes, or other people's bones, like Harry's injury. But he was never willing to put himself in crazy danger because he deep down knows how incompetent he is.
That's true. Well, he's got like the little version.
The giddiness, I don't know, and dangerous overconfidence.
Yeah. He did the knockoff brand. This is what he was addicted to.
Yeah. So they get into starting to make their potions and they're making the draft of living death. And so, you know, Harry and Ron don't have any supplies, don't have any books. And, you know, Slughorn lets them borrow a few books. And the book, tattered old textbook Harry gets, has been scribbled in with all these various, you know, diverging instructions. And he finds that they are a lot better than the actual official instructions in getting the results of the potion.
Yeah, just the little kind of tweaks, like crush with the flat side of the dagger to release the juice. So all these little subtleties help make the potion what it needs to be.
Yeah, like adding like one counterclockwise stir after so many, like seven clockwise stirs, you know, all that stuff. So by taking these little subtle differences into account, Harry's potion ends up even being better than Hermione.
Ooh,
which is quite unprecedented.
Yeah, she doesn't love that. She's still, I mean, I think Hermione's, she wants her friends to be successful, but Harry also didn't really do this by himself. He got some help, so.
So ultimately, Slughorn's so impressed. Oh, you must have inherited your mother's, you know, gift with potions. You win, Felix Felicis, blah, blah, blah.
Like he flippin' needs it. And I mean, I guess he does.
So what, there are diverging opinions about, you know, again, how do we define cheating? And is what Harry did cheating? because he didn't set out to do it, obviously.
No.
He didn't set out to do it.
He didn't know it would be successful.
No, he didn't. He didn't know that either. And Ron points that out. It could have been a disaster.
Right. I don't know. So I've bought used books before, and there's been little notes that kind of help maybe you think about something differently based on somebody else's notes. I don't know.
It's in that, for me, it's in that gray area of he's not cheating because he's following instructions. Like, he's just following a different thing, a different type of instructions. But I guess it's the question of, in this one instance, he's not cheating. But if he were to continue down this path, it's he has a privilege. He has access to something that not everyone else has access to.
Yeah.
So it's the question of, you know, I guess cheating isn't the right word for it, at least not in the way I understand cheating. To me, it's more a question of accessibility and equity, which the education system is rampant in that, because while we do not have a peerage system in the United States, like more overt forms of social hierarchy, education is a huge way in and Ivy League schools is a huge way in which some of those inequalities are maintained.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Money. Whatevs. I don't know.
Yeah. So for me, it's an equal accessibility issue.
Yeah.
So like if everyone had access to these instructions and still Harry did better.
Right. Then he just followed the instructions better than everybody else. But in this case, he just knew how to finesse things. It's like when you're making chai or something, roasting your spices to make them, you know, whatever. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Just different nuances to make things a little different. And he kind of got that mm-hmm. little assist.
Yeah. And Hermione is not too pleased by it. You know, I suppose you think I cheated, he finished, aggravated by her expression. Well, it wasn't exactly your own work, was it? She said stiffly. And, you know, again, she has a point because, like, you know, does Harry at all have any indication of, like, the intricacies and the chemistry of why these little subtleties are better than the original instructions? Fuck no.
No, I mean, I guess that would be where he would have really earned that, is he like had done his homework and knew that if I pressed this way, like, you know, went to cooking school, essentially.
Yeah, like if he was too much of a chicken shit to like try these things like in the classroom, you know, right. and risk, again, his cauldron blowing up, but he did his own research that, oh, this actually could work. That would be one thing. But no, he's just right. He just followed it blindly.
Like a person might do. I don't know. I wouldn't trust it. I wouldn't.
Yeah. And Ginny doesn't trust it either, because Ginny, based on her very particular experience, is like, you're doing what a book is just telling you to do.
Good. Like, good on her. And also for like reminding us, like, oh yeah, Jenny had an experience with something like that. Maybe let's just pump the brakes here.
Yes and no. I guess it's just because it's not... To me, it's apples and oranges, you know, at least from what we know of the book at this point, because it's not a magical ghostly entity writing back to you. It's just someone's notes from the past. They have no magical component in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, I guess what I should say is I understood Jenny's kind of like
trepidation.
You sure you want to do that? Yeah, based on her experience a little bit.
Yeah. And Hermione puts it through a few test spells, and Harry's like, finished, or do you want to see and wait it if it does a few backflips? Dulling out the sass.
I know. He needs to calm down sometimes.
And so the book falls open, and he looks at the bottom of the back cover, and it says, this book is the property of the Half-Blood Prince.
Dun, dun, dun. But before that, because this is my favorite part.
Yeah.
Where was it? Basically, oh, okay. Harry's a sudden waft of that flowery smell he had picked up in Slughorn's dungeon when he's standing next to Jenny.
Yes.
What's going on, Harry? But who the hell is the Half-Blood Prince? I have no idea.
No theories at all.
I mean, Voldemort is an easy one.
But he was already Riddle.
Yeah, I know. Like, he's just up to it again, and he's being cocky. I want to say Snape, and I don't know why. So I know he's not the Half-Blood Prince.
Interesting choice.
I have no. So, Half Blood Prince, Half Blood Prince. I have no idea.
Yeah. So, I don't know why, just before we move on, like, it says a flowery smell. I always have this feeling that Ginny smells like honeysuckle, because that is a very good, it's very good, a good flower smell.
Yeah, kind of would, like, be.
And you don't see it often. You don't see it often enough. I remember getting one, like, set of honeysuckle, like, body lotion and shower gel for, like, my mother-in-law, and I'm like, this smells so good.
You just made me think of something. I won't go on that tangent. Okay. Yeah, it's totally unrelated. Yeah. Yeah, I something in a British garden. That's, I don't know if honeysuckle's over there, but.
Yeah, I don't know. Alrighty then. So let me take a break and go to the bathroom, because this is a long chapter too.
No problem. I might do the same thing. I will do that. And check on my cats.
And now it's time for chapter 10, The House of Gaunt. And for the rest of the week, potions lessons, Harry continued to follow the Half-Blood Prince's instructions whenever they deviated from the original, with the result that by the fourth lesson, Slughorn was raving about Harry's ability, saying he had rarely taught anyone so talented.
Blech. And I mean, of course, Harry's not going to be like, oh yeah, I have these special notes. He's just going to be like, oh, sure. Maybe eventually he'll get there, but not right now.
Yep. And Harry's wondering, like, what, who the Half-Blood Prince could have been, because it's not just that one, like, every recipe has adjustments, and not just that, other notes about, like, maybe other spells that they've invented, like this
half. Yeah.
And it seemed to be, you know, spells that the prince had made up himself, or herself, said Hermione eerily. It might have been a girl. I think the handwriting looks more, like, not that Hermione doesn't have certain points, but I get frustrated with Hermione's irritation with the Half-Blood Prince, because you know it's not fully rooted in, like, genuine, like, notions of, again, ethics. It's not even being angry at Harry. She can't stand that someone's better than her, even if that exactly. person is probably maybe long dead or whatever.
Right.
And their and their notes are a constant reminder that someone was better at her at something.
No, she's just being an asshole. Like, that, straight up.
So, but they can't dwell on it too much, because Harry's got his lesson with Dumbledore.
Do, do, do. Done.
Double D.
The coolest man in the land. Yep. Acid pops.
Acid pops, and Harry, on the way to his office, sees and ducks and hides from Professor Trelawney, of all people.
Yeah.
And Trelawney's like, two of spades, conflict, she murmured. Seven of spades, an ill omen. Ten of spades, violence. Knave of spades, a dark young man, possibly troubled, one who dislikes the questioner.
Oh my.
And she stopped dead right in front of the other side of Harry's statue. Well, that can't be right, she said, annoyed.
That's funny. Well, cooking sherry behind her. Oh, okay.
Well, yeah, that's the ongoing thing that she, like, gets, that she's, like, a drug. She's, like, an alcoholic, and she drinks cooking sherry.
I did not pick up on that, but that's very interesting. All right.
Yep. So, we've got Harry up in Dumbledore's office, and Dumbledore's like, you have been busy. A detention under your belt already?
Yeah, right. And he's like, well, you're going to still have to do that. Harry thought he got out of it. Probably, but no. Mm-hmm. Reassigned.
Yep. And so, you know, Harry, Ron, and Hermione have, of course, been, like, speculating what Dumbledore's going to do. And they think it's, in some capacity, going to be some sort of, like, defensive magic and, like, training stuff. But what Dumbledore has in store for him is quite different.
Which is education, basically. I mean, like, when it boils down to it, it's the showing the history of what's happening. Which can be very enlightening, and more people could use some of that anyway and pay attention to it.
I'm sorry. You said history, and that just made me think of the current battle in our education system of like not wanting to teach the realities of
slavery,
the history of slavery and racial injustice. And I'm approaching it particularly from the context of all the crazy ass book bans, and I'm very tempted to do like a video essay about it.
Please do, because I those have gotten even more and more out of control.
Yeah. So again, history is important to me, and trying to, you know, I've watched a few documentaries about it of, you know, journalists going to like, you know, why do you want to ban these books? And again, one white mother was, conservative mother was like, again, criticizing a children's book that depicts the story of Ruby Bridges, you know?
Oh, I don't. Okay. I didn't know about that.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And basically saying like, you know, it's not, it's not teaching, oh, how brave Ruby Bridges was, like, you know, you should be like her. It's talking about all of the like division and how bad the white people were and things like that. And I'm like, they were bad.
Yeah. I mean, face facts, people.
I don't know who wrote it, but who wrote that book, White Fragility?
I don't know.
Every fucking person, you know, every white evangelical housewife, husband, you know, should be reading that book. That it's like, you don't have to have conversations with your children of color about hard issues. Like, why? How do you get off of thinking that your little bit of discomfort is like such an affront that you deserve to not, you know, feel anything?
Right.
Right. Anyway, so history needs to be taught with all of its warts and
right.
trying to portray again like all the racist, all the, you know, stuff about racism that they want to kick out of curriculums and out of school libraries is they want to portray it as it's, you know, fueling further division. And it's like, no, it's not. You are, because you can't fucking deal with basic history.
Just letting people read. Like, it's not a big deal. I look at some of those lists, I'm like, I got 10 more books worse than that. I'm not going to tell you what they are, but let me share them. I don't know.
Yeah.
That drives me crazy.
Yeah. So anyway, history, important.
Yeah. Role. And that's what Harry gets to learn.
And I'll say one more thing about it is my personal part of my theory in terms of rise of Trump and everything and rise of, you know, him legitimizing all these things we thought we had banished, at least from polite society. I don't think it's a coincidence that the generation that personally witnessed World War II and its atrocities is almost completely gone, has completely died off. So now people are giving into those ideologies again because very few of us are still around that lived through the consequences and implications of those ideologies.
That's true.
And that's my personal theory of why some of this stuff is, you know, is kicking back up, because there's not enough of the survivors anymore to tell you, you guys are stupid.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's true.
Anyway, history, important, and we're going into Voldemort's history, but that is not what Harry figures out at that point. We don't figure out what it is until the very end.
Right. Right. And he's not going to learn any cool moves or spells. He's just going to go learn about, yeah, you know,
so,
this guy.
I don't know if there's, you know, again, I could probably cite a lot of this verbatim because, again, this is one of my loop chapters that I would fall asleep to, or the background of my childhood. So summary is Bob Ogden, ministry worker, goes on one of his duties to the Gaunt's house because Morfin the son attacked a muggle and needs to face a hearing because of it. And then Marvolo is just this white trash who only cares about blood status and thinking that throwing any of that clout will have any impact on Ogden at all. And then, so is there anything particular about this interactions that you wanted to point to or discuss?
I mean, not until the very end with the love potion and that kind of thing, just because that's pretty messed up and it's a good callback to the previous chapter, but and also the like nailing a snake to the door was pretty,
oh yeah,
and they're speaking in parcel tongue, that's, yeah, so that's thing.
And that's an interesting notion of like of memory magic, that, you know, clearly there's a certain level, you know, obviously memory is very subjective and things like that, but clearly when it comes to the magic of these sort of like these tangible memories that people can witness, like the magic involved like forces a certain degree of objectivity, that even though Ogden does not speak parcel tongue at all, like the magic of his memory is accurate enough that he can record it, and then someone who does speak parcel tongue can get something out of the memory.
Right. Yeah. I think you just kind of described what I envisioned pretty well. Like, kind of trailer trashy folks here, and it's just all just like unpleasantness. Like, I know that's a very dumbed down version of kind of like, and I kind of ripped through this chapter pretty fast, but just very unpleasant, very kind of, if he works for the ministry, he can't be like that. He's got to have some kind of wits about him, right? I mean, like, I don't know.
Honestly, because you bring that up, like, again, like, Marvolo is so out of touch with, like, reality and, like, what matters. Because, again, he's so deluded by his sense of grandeur and his family's grandeur.
Mm.
And thinking that that still holds clout. One comparison I thought of that I've never thought of before in reading this chapter is Marvolo Gaunt and Viserys Targaryen.
Oh, okay.
Because Viserys is also that person, fallen aristocrat, fallen royal, who even despite being what under most circumstances would completely shatter and or at the very least humble an aristocrat in terms of his life in exile and, you know, being beholden to, you know, benefactors like Elias Mopas. Instead, it just increases and fuels his indignation and arrogance in regards to like who he is and his bloodline and all that crap.
And that's Danny's brother, right?
Yeah, Viserys. Sorry, sorry if I didn't specify.
No, it's I'm very many years removed from my Game of Thrones.
I thought maybe did you watch the House of Dragon first episode last night? I haven't yet.
Got it. No, I got to finish the Sex Pistols show, which has been very interesting, very gritty. But no, my parents were basically begging me to watch it. They were like, oh my God, so amazing. So I'll get there, mom and dad. Yeah. I'll get there.
So yeah, just this guy who's been, and all what he does is like when his words aren't pretending, he thinks like, look at this ring. Look at this ring I have.
Oh yeah.
What does he call it? Like Percival coat of arms or whatever, like on it and everything. And then that doesn't do anything to Ogden. And so Marvolo screams, takes his daughter by the throat and drags her by the neck, which it turns out that she's wearing this necklace that at the end of it is a locket.
Okay.
With like a serpentine S that shows that this was Slytherin's locket.
Ooh, Slytherin. Oh yeah. Man.
And again, still not getting anywhere with Ogden's. Like, I don't give a crap about your ancestors. Your son attacked a muggle. And we get a little interlude by these two muggles riding on horseback outside. And right. The girl is like, can't you clear away that old hovel? And the guy says, it's not ours. That place belongs to a tramp called Gaunt and his children. The son is quite mad. And it's like, is that a snake on the door? Good, I told you, the sun's not right in the head. Don't look at it, Cecilia, darling. And Morfin says to his sister, darling, darling, he called her, so he wouldn't have you anyway.
I just, like, all this was just very strange.
Yeah, and Gaunt's like, what this? She likes looking after that muggle, always in the garden when he passes, peering through the hedge at him, isn't she? Hanging out the window to look out at a muggle, said Gaunt quietly. Is it true my daughter, pure-blood descendant of Salazar's Slytherin, hankering after a filthy, dearth-maned muggle? Although I do admit, hankering got incorporated into my vocabulary from this book, from this scene.
Hankering, that's a good word.
But I got him, father, cackled Morfin. I got him as he went by, and he didn't look so pretty with hives all over him, did he, Merope?
Ugh! Stop! Like, this is not nice. I don't like this.
And so Gaunt goes as if he's going to, like, choke Merope, but Ogden, you know, repels him, and then Ogden flees, and the memory ends.
Damn.
And Harry's like, what happened to the girl, like, Merope? Oh, she survived. Ogden operated back to the ministry and returned with reinforcements within 15 minutes. Morfin and his father attempted to fight, but both were overpowered, removed from the cottage, and subsequently convicted by the wizened Gamut. Morfin, who had already had a record of muggle attacks, was sentenced to 3 years in Azkaban. Marvolo got 6 months. And Harry's like, Marvolo? That's right. I'm glad to see you're keeping up. That old man was Voldemort's grandfather. Did you remember the name Marvolo?
No. I'm like, Harry, I am not keeping up. So no, I did not remember that.
Yeah, so because we know from Riddle's diary that Voldemort's original name was Tom Marvolo Riddle.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And, you know, Tom Marvolo Riddle creates, not the acronym, the anagram of I am Lord Voldemort.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay. Ugh.
I'm just thinking, imagine just sitting there, like, you know, re-scrambling your name, trying to come up with a badass name.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say I could sit here and do it, but I'm not going to because I don't know.
This is quite a conundrum, like that sort of riddle for translators, naturally.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, you know, to be able to switch the name up to be, you know, I am Lord Voldemort within the various languages. And so in the French version of Harry Potter, Voldemort's, like, original, like, middle name has to be Elvis.
Oh!
Like Tom Elvis. It's called Tom Elvis Judasaur because that translates to Je suis Voldemort.
That's really funny. I mean,
there's someone who's done, like, a fan art of, like, Voldemort, like, dressed as Elvis because...
Oh my gosh. That's... Elvis, R.I.P.
Yeah, so, yeah. Voldemort's grandfather was... that old white trash Marvolo.
Yikes.
And then Harry figures out so Merope was, you know, Voldemort's mother. And he immediately knows that it has to be Merope who is Voldemort's mother because he already knew that that Voldemort's father was a muggle. So it couldn't have been Morphin. I did once one of my longer fan fictions that I wrote was that there existed a granddaughter of Morphin gone, so that there was another heir of Slytherin.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Walking around in this, you know, in this universe, and she was a love interest for Sirius Black.
Hell yeah, I like that. That reminds me of there's a, I think it's called The Dark Descent of Elizabeth Frankenstein, and I don't know, just the kind of reminded me of.
Yeah. So, and then it's like it's also so happens you had a glimpse of Voldemort's father, the Muggle Morphin attacked. So Dumbledore goes on to be like, this can only be guesswork, but I suspect that once Merope was free of her father and brother, she could, you know, take full advantage of her freedom and gave a love potion to Tom Riddle.
Okay, so love potion, like, is kind of romanticized. Like, ooh, it's a love potion, whatever.
Yes, it's romanticized pre-Me Too without the full, yes. Where people are much more cognizant of the notion of consent and the really shady, sketchy implications of love potions.
Yeah, because this is basically, like, a date rape drug. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so it's very interesting because we have, again, not an uncommon occurrence where this victim and you feel so sorry for her, but then she goes on to essentially be this perpetrator and you know and some would say, you know, abuser, because she, you know, drugged this right. muggle to, you know, marry her and, you know, have a child, and then without warning Tom Riddle Sr. returns to the village, the town, without his wife, saying that he had been hoodwinked and taken in. And that more than likely this was, he figured out Merope was a witch and is like, I don't want any of this. I didn't ask for any of this, and left her.
That's
which, okay. Can we blame him for that?
No, not really.
Yeah. And one interesting notion is the interesting coincidence of Merope is a name in Greek mythology. She is one of the nine Pleiades, which are a bunch of, like, nymph-like sisters. But Merope is the least brightest star, and the legend, the reason that that star was named after Merope is because Merope, of all of these, like, nymph-like sisters, she was the only one who, like, fell in love with a human and ended up regretting it.
Okay, well, that makes sense given the context. Yeah,
so,
there.
Yeah, so, yeah. So what went wrong? Why did the love potion stop working? Again, this is guesswork, but I believe that Merope, who is deeply in love with her husband, could not bear to continue enslaving him by magical means. I believe she made the choice to stop giving him the potion. Perhaps besotted as she was, she had convinced herself that he would by now have fallen in love with her in return. Perhaps she thought he would stay for the baby's sake. If so, she was wrong on both counts. He left her, never saw her again, and never troubled to discover what became of his son.
Probably for the best for him.
Yep. Yeah. So, and again, Harry's pulling a Ron moment where he's like, Sir, is it important to know all this about Voldemort's past?
Shut the hell up, Harry. Like, here's the opportunity, Dumbledore. Sass Harry. Be like, oh, I don't know, Harry, maybe. Like, oh my god.
And Harry's about to leave, and he was almost at the door when he saw it. Sitting on the little spindly-legged table that supported so many frail-looking silver instruments was an ugly gold ring set with a large, cracked black stone. Sir, that ring, yes? You're wearing it when we visited Professor Slughorn that night. So I was. But isn't that the same ring Marvolo Gaunt showed Ogden? The very same. But how come? Have you always had it? No, I acquired it very recently. A few days before I came to fetch you from your aunt and uncle's, in fact. That would be around the time you injured your hand then, sir. Around that time. Yes, Harry. Sir, how exactly? Too late, Harry. You shall hear the story another time. Good night.
Damn.
Good night, sir.
Shut down. Now we know why. Because he didn't comment on his funky hand, you know, when he, I don't think he did, when he initially connects with him. So something's up with the ring.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And thus concludes chapter 10.
Well.
Again, lots of history. History is important, boys and girls. Learn about it. And if your school district is being stupid and denying you, you know, historically accurate books, go get an e-library card with the Brooklyn Library. They're offering it to all teenagers across the country to compensate for evangelical crazies.
Please do that. Please do that.
Alrighty, and now we move on to our first exercise, Gothic Geek Out. I think this is a pretty obvious one, but...
Yes, I think we both, the story that we just walked through is pretty gothic and horrible.
The Gaunts, but there are so... Here, go ahead, Wyatt, there are many elements you could, you know, take out of the Gaunt story and everything and in Gothic. So is there any particular facet that you kind of leaned on?
I mean, I kind of, you know, because I said, like, I like romance and complicated love relationships. And the kind of entrapment to thus, you know, bring Voldemort about is there's just an element of gothiness to that. I just kind of had these visions of a man in a dark horse riding off onto the moors or something like that. Yeah. But so that was really what stuck out to me. The rest of it, you know, just kind of the setting and everything else is gothic. And I mean, almost Southern Gothic really, but
yeah, in a lot of ways. So yeah, cause obviously I chose the Gaunts as well. Again, the Gaunts very much fulfill that tradition of, even though there's not a manor house anymore to represent the decaying aristocracy, the Gaunts are very much that symbolism of a different type of world hierarchy has, you know, completely gone by the wayside, and they have absolutely nothing left, and they have not adapted with the times. They've clung to their delusions of superiority and haven't basically gotten with the program. So that's a huge component of Gothic literature, and because so often the manor house represents that decay.
Yeah.
And just in thinking about that, that made me think of just the sort of, again, we see the manor house so often as, you know, the decaying grandeur and stuff, but it's interesting to think about that in the context of, like, now modern times, like the housing crisis, and like the fact that even not even a manor house, basic home ownership is so unattainable for so many people.
Yeah. Yeah, so, it's really upsetting.
Because I've literally seen various forms of a meme with the concept of, like, you know, having, you know, all these thriller stories that start with, like, them buying a dilapidated manor house, and, like, you know, that everyone thinks it's a bad idea. It's like, bitch, getting a dilapidated manor house is like a win in this economy.
Right. Yeah. Cheap old houses. Y'all check it out. Get yourself a home and whatever. It also made me think of It's a Wonderful Life, which is, I don't know, maybe it is a gothic tale, but they move into an old dilapidated. Anyway, I've only watched that movie every year.
Yeah. No. One of my favorite booktubers, Ariel Bissett, I think she's Canadian. Like, she documented her, like, you know, buying a house experience and renovating it. And because it was definitely an old dilapidated little, not quite a cottage, a little bigger, but it's a cutesy house. And one of the videos was literally like, some sort of like attic-y under, you know, under space, and it's like, you know, who hit a body in here?
Ugh, yeah,
like, I would, the ultimate like creepiness. But yeah, so the Gaunts represent that society. Obviously Gaunts use what I think I talked about in one of the Order of the Phoenix chapters, again, the notion of snakes, you know, with, yeah, you know, Nagini. And again, of course, the snake is heavily associated with Slytherin. That's the whole animal that they talk to, and that stemming from, again, the Christian demonization of snakes.
Yeah.
You know, just to further emphasize, we're evil because we have snakes and we talk to snakes.
Yeah. There's something with femininity in snakes, I thought recently, that I read. And
I don't know femininity. Traditionally in like older pagan stuff, snakes were seen as healing in a lot of ways, which is why even some of, like, you know, the amulets, like, it has the staff with the snakes winding right around it. So like the notion of venom and anti-venom.
Snakes are fine, you know, as long as you don't get bit by one. Just be careful. Don't get
better
bit
than
by
spiders.
A Yeah, honestly, yeah. I'll take a snake over spider. It's fine.
Spiders are of the dark side.
They are of the dark side. And then freaking Stranger Things. Okay, Morgan, I'm talking to you. You didn't warn me. There are a lot of spiders in there. And I sent him a message. I said, oh my God, the spiders. And he says he cackle laughed. So
yeah.
Anyway, for all those other spider haters, watch out. Season 4, there are a lot of them.
Yeah. So again, any other elements of the Gaunts? Again, what you also said, like, again, the entrapment and the story behind Voldemort's conception and how he was brought into this world, very, very reminiscent of like a sort of scandal or secret of this illegitimate child that the family in the dilapidated house is trying to conceal.
Yeah. Yeah.
And my favorite variants are when the illegitimate child comes back and kills either the patriarch or kills all of them as revenge.
Yeah. Yeah, that's some darkness right there. I don't know why I'm looking at my bookshelf.
What was the book we read for? You weren't in that episode, like The Quickening. You read it, but you had since left Sublimely Gothic. So
I don't
you
know
weren't...
if I read that. Did you interview the author?
Yeah, I interviewed the author, and I told her, like, for a long time I thought like the main character's love interest was actually going to be the illegitimate child that actually survived and was the one killing them.
Oh wow. Yeah.
But she did not, she decided not to go that route. Although she does have another book coming out, which I need to The Shadowing, which I need to read as well.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I have a little stack of gothy books I need to get on.
Yeah. So many things going on with the Gaunts. Their name is Gotham.
Yeah.
The Gaunts.
The Gauntlet. I guess the only other thing that we could just on the surface level would be Snape's gothification of Defense of the Dark Arts, which, I mean, sounds like
his haunted mansion version of the DADA classroom.
Yes. Which, I mean, the haunted mansion is definitely more fun than any room Snape's going to be in. But yeah.
Did you watch the Muppets Haunted Mansion, like the Halloween special that came out last year?
Oh no, I should.
It is
no.
Honestly, I think it's a hell of a lot better adaptation than that stupid Eddie Murphy
movie. Oh God, that was horrible. Yeah, I'll have to watch. That sounds cute.
It's amazing. The songs are amazing, and yeah, go watch it.
I will. I'll have to go watch it. I love The Haunted Mansion.
It's like, welcome, foolish Muppets.
Oh, that used to be my computer background. I'm gonna have to get that for Halloween season.
Yep. Alrighty then. So, beating the gothic Gaunts, beating a dead horse. And so we can move on to Tarot of the Day.
Tarot of the Day.
Which the card I picked at random was the Five of Cups.
Five of Cups.
The Five of Cups often appears in a tarot reading when a situation hasn't turned out the way you expected. I don't care about you, stupid ad. Go away. And you are sad, regretful, and disappointed. Instead of moving on with your life, you're choosing to wallow in your self-pity. All you can focus on right now is what is wrong and how you failed. It's time to get over it. Sure, it feels the feels, but set yourself a time limit for your self-pity and then pull yourself together. Five of Cups suggests you're stuck in the past and can't let go. Old wounds and bitter memories flood your mind. As you think about what happened, you blame yourself or believe you're a victim of life circumstances. these negative emotions are holding you back from your full potential, release them so you can move on and create positive change. So
I know. I mean, Snape comes to mind, just his general demeanor. And I feel there wasn't a shining example of this related to him, but I feel like that's the best application I can come up with.
Yeah, because that is his whole thing of I'm a grumpy, emo, gothic incel, and I don't want to make any steps to possibly improve my life and go like on a date or whatever.
Right. Why improve my life at all? Yeah. Just be mad.
I thought of Marvolo Gaunt because he symbolizes all of that bitterness of not letting go, thinking you're a victim, and like not getting with the program and adapting to life's changing social structures. Because again, which clearly, you know, as we see with families like the Malfoys, they're still assholes, but still they were able to adapt enough that they could still maintain their status and power,
right,
in the community, even if some of their ideals are not the most popular anymore, or at least not within the veil of polite society.
Yeah.
So it's not like that was impossible for certain, you know, pure blood families, but you know, it seems the Gaunts were just so fanatical, and also again, we don't know exactly what caused them to squander, you know, all the money, because Dumbledore says like the money had been lost even several generations before Marvolo Gaunt was born. And so yeah, like I can say like the typical depiction, regardless of which tarot deck, the Five of Cups shows three cups knocked over and like the figure being sad over those knocked over cups, but then behind the figure, the cups they're not facing are still upright. And so so it's always the symbolism of, you know, there is a little bit of hope, but you're choosing to focus on the three, you know, cups that are spilt and not the two that are still like upright, and that there are still hopeful possible solutions, but you're choosing to ignore them.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
I'm just thinking of, yeah, I think in terms of, again, not seeing, you know, better ways to adapt, that could definitely be applied to Snape.
Yeah. Snape is the embodiment of that.
Any other thoughts?
No, I mean, I think you pretty much nailed it, and the rest of the Snape talk too. I think we're covered.
Then let me go get my little booklet for the Oracle card, the Black Moon Astrology card.
Oh, yes.
Because the card I picked at random was Libra.
Oh.
What?
I was yelling at my husband. He just got home. So.
Oh, okay. So yeah, Libra. We've never pulled this card before.
No.
Libra is my mother's
sign.
It is also my brother-in-law's sign.
Well, all right then.
Yeah. So we've got don't go it alone. Linking up with a partner will serve you best. Libra is the sign of balance, charm, and beauty. Librans are notorious for their wit, ability to weigh and judge, as well as their appreciation for the beautiful things in life. They adore collecting striking things, that means objects and people. Librans are aesthetes with a love of art and literature that can at times be shallow, be showy, and vainglorious. Librans are known for changing their minds and opinions. What is true one day may not be the next. Because they are so balanced, they see all sides to every issue, but they tend to vacillate and have trouble coming to any final decision. Librans tend to have second thoughts and change their minds at the last minute. They will also float along, waiting for matters to resolve on their own without pushing as hard as they need to. This is a rather negative interpretation of the Libra sign that I'm typically used to reading or hearing about. Like, a lot of these, like, sort of, like, flippant, you know, wishy-washy traits, I tend to attribute to Gemini, not Libra.
Yeah, and some of the positive things I kind of felt were more like Taurus, but I don't know.
Libras make outstanding judges and negotiators. They can be agreeable, but sometimes agree to things they don't want, sacrificing what they truly feel and think just to get along. Well, again, I know he isn't one, but one guy that's coming to mind in terms of Libra-ness, at least in this interpretation, is Slughorn.
That's exactly who I thought about. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, so because he is definitely the one that he loves the finer things, and
yes,
he's And the way it's saying, like, taking forever to make a final decision because they can see all sides of the issues and they very carefully weigh in, that can be attributed to Slughorn and him taking so long to be like, okay, I should go to Hogwarts, because he was so hard trying not to declare a side.
Right, right. Yeah. I feel like there's not, I can't even really think of a different interpretation of somebody that would be that. But he's a Taurus, right?
Like, yeah.
Okay.
Yep, he's like me. When the Libra card, Ken, turns up, it indicates you are riding the fence over something and need to make a decision soon. If you do not make your decision, it may be made for you. The potential for you not liking the end is high, and if you do not act and decide soon. So, again, this has kind of stumped me, because I'm like, oh, Libra, yeah, that'll be an interesting one. But again, this is a very negative take on, you know, Libras, because usually they're hailed as, you know, again, being the negotiators, being desiring justice and balanced, and usually that's portrayed as a certain level of moral, you know, and ethical stubbornness in, okay, in their convictions of, you know, desperately wanting things to be fair. And again, like, that sort of wishy-washy, oh, I can't make a final decision because I know every side is valid. Like, I attribute that more to Geminis, but that's just me.
Yeah, there's, like, duality of Geminis. I guess the difference, if I'm reaching, would Geminis seem to be based more in their emotion, and Libras maybe logic. They're just weighing all the facts more. Yeah. Gemini seems to waffle in emotion more. I don't know.
Possibly. They are both air signs, but...
Mm. Okay. I don't know why. I just always think the Geminis I know are, they're all very smart. That's what I'll, mm-hmm. I don't know a lot of Libras.
Yeah. Alrighty then. And now we move on to our final exercise, fan fiction time.
I've thought about this a little differently than I have in the past. And I thought about what would be an alternative way to tell that story, you know, about Voldemort's past that wasn't using the pensive, and, you know, because Harry has to find out that information. How would he find out? Would he, like, open a book, or, cause I don't think he would be like, I'm going to read this.
Thing that I mean, comes to mind is if Dumbledore presented this folder of, like, newspaper articles and, like, court documents and, like, birth certificate or, like, you know, marriage certificate, divorce, you know, immediately comes to mind is, like, here, look at all this stuff, and, like, using the Socratic method to, like, piece together, what am I trying to get you to know?
Yeah, that would be interesting. Yeah, that's... Yeah, that was kind of the best I could do, because I feel like both of these chapters were pretty, I mean, I don't know. That was my hot take. This episode was an alternative way to get that information to Harry. I guess he used to have prophetic dreams, but that wouldn't be prophetic.
So, like, when you were contemplating that question, were you purely thinking of not using the pensive, or possibly using the pensive and a different memory, or a different way to using a different memory to try and relay that information?
I think I was just thinking, like, what if they didn't use the pensive at all? Because, like, what if that wasn't an option? Because in the past, it's very much been, and one of the quotes that I thought was kind of interesting was Harry was like, or sorry, Dumbledore was like, yeah, you use the pensive, and I'm letting you do it, instead of just, like, you know, snooping in on it. I just thought, what if that wasn't an option at all in this chapter? Yeah. How would he get that?
Because I'm kind of going towards, like, what sort of different memories, like, because I think, you know, Bob Ogden is just a very, you know, outsider who just happened to come across this family. Like, what if Dumbledore had been able to secure, like, a memory from, like, Morphin?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That would be interesting. He's got to get the information somehow. But
yeah, he has to get the information somehow. Or what if he got, I don't know, what if there was a memory of Voldemort's father in some capacity?
Yeah, that'd be interesting. That was mine. What about yours?
Mine was a little bit whimsical and not that serious. What would be Slughorn's style of teaching Defense Against the Dark Arts?
Super chill. No, he would not let any anybody that's in his favor have a bad situation. I don't know. What did you think about that?
I don't know. I just thought about, like, again, he's using all these potions. Like, what would he be decorating his office with to both his personality and his subject matter? Like, how would he be, like, trying to emphasize certain points?
It would be, like, the rarest and the most, like, coveted Defense Against the Dark Art, like, paraphernalia or something.
Paraphernalia. Yeah. Like, oh, this is like the grit, you know, this is the gauntlet of like virtue that protects you from any possible.
Yeah. Or like that ring that Dumbledore has. He'd be like showing off that ring or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It would definitely, I feel like his any classroom that he's going to have is going to be a little more bougie than Snape. Yeah, is like, you're going to be in a dungeon. Like, ugh.
But. Yeah. All right, then. So that is that. And next time we shall go over chapters 11 and 12, which, what are they? It's Hermione's Helping Hand and Silver and Opals.
All right.
Catch you guys later. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Rambling Raven Puffs. Our theme music was composed by John Williams, recreated by Kinez Norwar. This podcast is but one of the many shows produced by Sophie Mare Studios. You can get the latest news by following our social media, Sophia Mare Studios on Instagram, Sophia Mare Studios on TikTok, and SophiaMare_pods on Twitter. You can connect with other listeners through the Sophia Mare Studios Discord server. You can support the show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/SophiaMareStudios, all lowercase. Higher tiers get access to even cooler perks. That was the Sophia Mare Studios podcast.